Okay, shalom everyone, welcome. Just going to take a moment to get the source book up so we can share it. Okay, hi everybody. Today is Wednesday, May 20th, and we are here on Zoom for our weekly lunch and learn. The Parshat HaShavua. This week's Lunch and Learn is sponsored by Daisy and Max Plankfeld in memory of Daisy's mother, Tzipporah Burstyn Orney, Tzipporah Bat Pinchas of blessed memory. Very grateful to the Plankfelds for sponsoring this class and this Lunch and Learn. So today we have, it's a very auspicious opportunity for us to learn Parshat HaShavua because we make a transition from the book of Vayikra to Sefer Bamidbar, from Sefer Vayikra to Sefer Bamidbar. And whenever there's a transition, a few things we should do is we should look for changes in theme between one book and the other book. And we're going to spend a little bit of time on that today. And besides looking at the general themes, we could try to sort of do a little bit of a deeper dive and look at some specific ideas that come to be developed over the course of the entire book. And we're going to do that as well today. So if I had to ask you, hold on a second here. I see already a little bit of a problem with the source book. So give me one second. Hold on a second, please. Okay, great. If I had to ask you, and you could use the raise hand function to see if you want to answer this question or just raise your hand and then I'll unmute just in case people can't get my attention that way. If I had to ask you, what's the theme change between Sefer Vayikra and Sefer Bamidbar, between the book of Leviticus and the book of Numbers? Anyone want to address the difference of focus between those two of the Chamishachim Shei Torah, of the five books of Moshe? Anyone want to take a stab at that? Okay, I see Zach. Go ahead, Zach, and then I see Colin. So Zach first.
I would like to suggest my view, what I call a building Jewish civilization. And one of the eight steps, or if you wish, definition of civilization is creation of organized religion. Nation cannot exist as a civilization without having it. I think what we see over here is a fundamental step in the book of Leviticus to create organized religion.
So that's in Leviticus, right? Okay.
Right.
And what's the change then? Do you have an idea of the change into Bamidbar?
And then we go to a narrative, how we can exist, learning already with the new knowledge and our personal view of our existence is already very much focused what we learn what we know from Book of Leviticus.
Okay, that's great. That's very, very similar, and we'll see. Very, very similar to. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Very, very similar to what Samson Raphael Hirsch says. So we will get to that in a little bit. So Vayikra certainly, Zach suggests, is definitely a focus on on creating an organized religion. There's no doubt about that. And Bamidbar moves into a narrative. What exactly that narrative represents vis-a-vis or as opposed to or in contrast to Vayikra still remains to be seen. Okay, fantastic. Colin, go ahead.
You have to
come completing their coming out of Egypt in slavery, and when they get to Numbers, then what they're doing is they're starting their journey into the Promised Land.
Okay, so Vayikra
in your view, Promised Land.
Okay, good. So Vayikra in your view, Colin, still represents leaving Egypt. That's very interesting. Right, because generally we think of Exodus as leaving Egypt, but you're suggesting that Vayikra is also a function of leaving Egypt. And actually, I think that's a very interesting approach, especially considering what Zach said, because leaving Egypt was not only about granting the Israelites their physical freedom, right? Leaving Egypt was also a function of moving them from being Avdei Paro, right, to being slaves of Paro, to Avdei Hashem, to being servants of God. And that is what happens essentially in the book of Vayikra, where there's so much focus on the ritual aspects of nationhood. So Shemot gives us the physical freedom, and Vayikra gives us the framework of what to do with that. With that physical freedom. So that's very interesting, Colin, that you see Vayikra sort of as a continuation of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Okay, good. Any other suggestions as to what the theme of Vayikra is and how it's different than the theme of Bamidbar? I see you, Zach. I'm just going to get you to see if anyone else first, because no, I'm looking for someone that hasn't had a chance yet. Okay, Zach.
I just want to say just one word. What Colin said, it's extremely essential from the point of view, the time, what we as a tribal entity spent in Egypt, it was lesson to learn. And this is how the process of existed Egyptian civilization, which one of the ancient in the human history, we rejected details, and Book of Leviticus showed how we rejected it. They had multiple gods, we choose one god.
Right,
they had
right.
multiple temples, we choose to build a Mishkan. And this is how we take best from the war, from the world that existed before
Excellent.
Us, and get it
and Vayikra
into,
shows that.
Into work of new established civilization. And actually, we were unique in this sense.
Excellent.
Because we never stopped to do it.
Excellent. Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you for that insight. Great. Okay, so let's look. I want to look at Samson Raphael Hirsch's first few paragraphs of his commentary on the book of Bamidbar, where he's going to address a few issues, including the issue that we started out with just discussing. Okay, so the first thing he does in his commentary is he explains to us the transition that we made. And he says some things very similar to what we have already said. So hopefully everyone sees here, it says chapter 1. Everyone see the text? Thumbs up if you can see the text. Yes? Okay, great. So he says, after the erection of the sanctuary of the Torah had been described at the end of the second book of the Torah, at the end of Shemot, the whole of the third book was devoted to the demands which that sanctuary made to the whole life of Israel. So already two interesting points here. One is the idea that and this really dovetails well again with what Colin said, the end of Sefer Shemot, the end of the book of Exodus, already begins the discussion of the building and the the architecture, if you will, of the Mishkan. So we already see that leaving Mitzrayim is not only about just physically leaving Mitzrayim. So it's built, and then Vayikra, right, is devoted, as Rav Hirsch says, to the demands which that sanctuary made to the whole life of Israel, both in terms of the rituals that took place in the Mishkan, as well as dealing with other laws, with the, as Zach said, the building of society, laws of being a good neighbor, laws of being a positive a contributor, if you will, to the society, all the laws of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, the interpersonal laws that are included in Vayikra, things about damages, all those things contribute to the sense that Vayikra is about setting up an ideal society. Okay, but then Rav Hirsch says something very interesting. It demanded symbolic expression by the sacrifices and the actual concrete sanctification of the whole mode of living. Like we said, there was ritual stuff, and then all aspects of life are given their rules. Thereby, the ideal was shown, which was to be realized by the public and private life of every individual and by the national life of the state. So this is the key word here that Rav Hirsch uses is ideal, right? What was presented in Vayikra is the ideal, the perfect, right? A perfect world where there was no other circumstances, no other extenuating circumstances, in a perfect world where there weren't complicated human factors. The world would look like it does as spelled out in Sefer Vayikra. But we know, right, that that's not the way the world operates, right? The world does not operate in a vacuum, right? We have our perfect equations of how things should work, and then we have to add in the most important or most consequential part of the equation, which is real life. And once real life occurs, a lot of the best laid plans don't work out, and that is what, or have to be adopted, and that is adapted. That is what Hirsch is suggesting. Thereby, the ideal was shown, which was to be realized by the public and the private life of every individual, and by the national life of the state. The final chapter in Nidrei HaKodesh allowed for the possibility of any individual feeling the necessity to express a special personal relation to this sanctuary by vowing to undertake symbolic consecration of his own person. So he just adds a parenthetical point that at the end of the book, people were allowed, there's not only the required sacrifices, but there are also nidavot, things that people can offer on their own that are not required. And then Hirsch says, but here's a transition between Vayikra and Bamidbar. Now this fourth book comes back to stark reality and shows us the actual relationship between the actual nation and this ideal of their calling shown in the third book. Right now, we're going to take all of the rules that we got in Vayikra, and we're going to see how they operate and how they work in the book of Bamidbar, because as Zach said, the book of Bamidbar now goes back to a narrative of the story of Bnei Yisrael. And a lot of the ups and downs and trials and tribulations of the Jewish people that we know about take place in the book of Bamidbar. And so Bamidbar is the testing ground. I think that's what Hirsch is saying, is the testing ground of just how well the ideal world of Vayikra can be superimposed in the real world, right? And the fact that it's in the wilderness is very poetic. Right, because the wilderness is wild by nature, right? There are no rules. So we're going to take all of these very, very carefully constructed rules of Vayikra, and we're going to try to impose them onto a large population in a place where there really are no rules. And that's what Hirsch is suggesting is what we should be looking for and focusing on as we read Vayikra. Now, this fourth book comes back to stark reality and shows us the actual relationship between the actual nation and this ideal of their calling shown in the third book. Accordingly, it begins. Okay, so that's the first point. And he says, then with that understanding, he's able to understand, explain how Sefer Bamidbar opens, the opening verses of Sefer Bamidbar. Let's look at that right above here. Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe b'Midbar Sinai ba'ol Moed, v'chad l'chodesh hasheni, v'shana hashenit l'tzeitam me'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor. And God spoke unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of meeting on the first day of the second month, in the second year of their exodus from the land of Egypt, saying, Se'u et rosh kol adat b'nei Yisrael. Take the sum of the total of the whole congregation, mishpachotam levet avotam, after their families, after their house and their fathers. Rav Hirsch is very concerned, or very interested in this word adat, congregation. He thinks that that is a key for word to understand this transition between Vayikra and Bamidbar. So let's go back into his commentary. Accordingly, Rav Hirsch says, it begins by having the individual members of the nation counted, but as an Edah, as one body united in this calling. So here Hirsch is highlighting the strange idea that we have a nation, but the nation is made up of individuals. So every person is counted, but that group is referred to as an Edah, as a congregation, right? It begins by having the individual members of the nation counted, but as an Edah, as one body united by this calling, right? We have the calling in Vayikra and Shemot and Har Sinai, and now we're going to try to apply it to life. So that has to be applied to each individual and the Edah. By such a census, it is brought home to the government that the united nation is no mere vague conception, but exists in this universal calling of its members and to the individuals that each of them is reckoned as a not unimportant member of that nation. So that's a little convoluted language. I think what Hirsch is saying is, by stating the verse this way, the Torah is trying to teach us two things. The word Edah, congregation, is not, and we're going to see this more explicitly in Rav Soloveitchik in a few minutes. The word Edah, the notion of a congregation, is not a collection of individuals. Edah is its own body. It's made up of individuals, but once it's comprised, it is no longer considered to be just a large group of people. It is now one entity, right? As it's called in the pasuk here, Adat B'nai Yisrael, the congregation of us. I've seen it compared to a corporation. Right? A corporation is not legally a collection of individual people. A corporation is understood legally to be its own entity, its own independent entity. And that's what an Edah is. But, says Rav Hirsch, the leaders of the community have to also realize that each individual in that community is important. And that's what he says at the end, that each one of them is reckoned as not unimportant member of that nation, and that the national mission reckons on the faithfulness to duty and conscious devotion to the common calling of all, of each individual. In order for the Edah to be formed properly, each individual is necessary. But once each individual buys in, they become part of the Edah. So this really raises an interesting question that Rabbi Soloveitchik raises in an article that he calls Community. What he's trying to understand from the Jewish perspective, does the individual lose its identity when it comes to the community? Does the individual live to serve the community, or does the community exist to actuate the individual? And Rabbi Soloveitchik ends up by saying it's an unanswerable question, right? It's both at the same time. But that's what Hirsch is alluding to here, is this idea of the congregation being its own independent entity and the importance of each individual. Now, you may ask, who cares, right? Who cares if B'nai Yisrael is viewed as an entity or if B'nai Yisrael is viewed as a collection of individuals? So there is, there are definitely some ramifications of that that we're going to get to in a moment. So, but now he still continues with discussing the third book, which is Vayikra. The third book ends with instructions for dedicatory counting of sheep in groups of flocks by their owner. This is so interesting. The fourth book begins with orders to count the nation as God's flock for their shepherd in their family and tribal groups. And here to each one passes single under the crook of the shepherd and knows that he gets counted as an independent member of his flock. So here Hirsch is sort of leaning towards the idea that every individual is important. Everyone gets counted singularly by God because every individual is important in that sense. And then he talks about the Midbar, the wilderness. The wilderness as the place for this counting is a proof that this counting was not for political purposes or for the national economy, right? That's interesting too, right? Why are you counting? Why at the beginning of Bamidbar are the Jews being counted? There's no state, there's no, you know, political entity that's being created. There's no commerce that's going on. The Jews are being fed from manna from heaven and a Be'er Mayim, a water well that follows them miraculously through the desert. They don't need to figure out how many workers there are and how many you know, wood shoppers and water carriers. What's the purpose of this count, right? And that's what Hirsch is getting at here. The wilderness as the place for this counting is a proof that this counting was not for political purposes or for the national economy, for which in the wilderness there could be no possible inducement. But the immediate addition of Sinai and Ohel Moed at once tells us that this counting was in the service of Torah, which was given on Sinai and had found a home for its homage in the Ohel Moed. Right? That's why the beginning starts by specifically saying that God spoke to them in Midbar Sinai, the same wilderness where the Torah was given, the Sinai desert, from the Ohel Moed, which is the place where the Torah rested, to remind us that this counting is not a political or military or economic. It's all about the Jews coming together to fulfill their national destiny, which is the Torah. After the Torah had been received on Sinai and on the first of Nisan had found a home for it, for its ideals with the represented tablets given as a pledge of the nation being reaccepted with God after the sin of the golden calf, on the first of Iyar, all tribes, families, individual men of the nation were to be counted for this Torah and to muster about this Torah as its guards. So a few ideas here before we take questions and move on to Rabbi Soloveitchik. One is the transition between Vayikra and Bamidbar for Rabbi Hirsch is the transition from the ideal to the real. Vayikra sets up the ideal world and Bamidbar is the testing ground to see how it can be applied to real life. One of the aspects of the life of a nation is the recognition of Adat Yisrael, the congregation of Israel, which is its own entity, not the sum of its parts, but its own entity. And at the same time, recognizing the importance of the individual contribution to that entity. And finally, the idea that this was done in the wilderness of Sinai, in Midbar Sinai, to remind us that going from the ideal to the real is the whole point is to give B'nai Israel the opportunity to apply the Torah. That's the blueprint, if you will, for B'nai Israel creating the society that was talked about in Vayikra. So that's sort of part one, which helps us understand the transition from Vayikra to Bamidbar and some of the main themes. So before I go on, I want to know if there are any questions or comments, and then we'll move on to a couple of other sources, two other sources from Rabbi Soloveitchik. Okay, I see Zach. Okay, go ahead, Zach.
I would like to make a statement. It's absolutely essential what you just taught us. This is the reason why historians in 20th century, when they defined Jewish civilization, they call this quasi-Western civilization. And what you just said, it's exactly why we are not Western, we are quasi-Western civilization. What is the main definition of Western civilization? It's a high level of individual, everything for individual. What is Chinese Confucian civilization? It's a governmental body, and people work for governmental body. They substitute to the state. What you just said is exactly both ways. On the one on the one side, we are a cherished individual growth and a philosophy of Western civilization. On the other side, only as an entity, as a one body, as Klal Israel, which is, I can't stop not mentioning. This is a beautiful moment. I call this great Jewish political statement made by Shmuel Navi in the chapter 8 of Shmuel book Aleph, when Shmuel could not accept that Jews were demanding for a king. He already said, "You do have a king," and this is a beautiful moment to mention it. We have Hashem. We don't need anything else. Let's organize us under those top level. Unfortunately, we lost.
So along those lines, I mentioned the dilemma that that the Rav of Soloveitchik mentions. So here it is on your screen, where he says as follows: the very instant we pronounce the word community, we recall by sheer association the ancient controversy between collectivism and individualism. Willy-nilly, the old problem of who and what comes first arises. Is the individual an independent free entity who gives up basic aspects of his sovereignty in order to live with a communal framework? Or is the reverse true? The individual is born into the community, which in turn invests him with certain rights. The perennial controversy is still unresolved. And then he goes on to say, and let us give a simple answer. Judaism rejects both alternatives. Neither theory per se is true. Both experiences, that of aloneness as well as that of togetherness, are inseparable basic elements of the I awareness. So that is sort of Rabbi Soloveitchik's formulation of that issue. Now I want to go back to our original source that we were looking at to see two other quotes from Rabbi Soloveitchik that directly relate to the comments of Rav Hirsch. So he says as follows. The community, this is from his article, Community. The community in Judaism is not a functional utilitarian, but an ontological one. The community is not just an assembly of people who work together for their mutual benefit, but a metaphysical entity, an individuality. I might say a living whole. In particular, Judaism has stressed the wholeness and the unity of Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish community. Right, so instead of looking at individual Jews as individual parts of the community, it's probably better to view each person as a limb of the body. Right, the community is a body, and each Jew is another part of the organism. Judaism has stressed the wholeness and unity of Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish community. The latter is not a conglomerate. Right? We don't look at the body as a conglomerate of arms and legs and hair and skin. Right? We look at the body as one whole. It is an autonomous entity endowed with life of its own. We, for instance, lay claim to Eretz Israel. So before I ask, right, what's the difference? What difference does it make of whether we look at ourselves as a group made up of individuals or one entity? So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, well, there's a very practical, almost halachic ramification of this. And he has some other examples elsewhere, but this is one of them. We, for instance, lay claim to Eretz Israel. God granted the land to us as a gift. To whom did he pledge the land? Neither to an individual or to a partnership consisting of millions of people. He gave it to Knesset Israel, to the community as an independent unity, as a distinct juridic metaphysical person. Like we said before, look at the community as a person. He did not promise the land to me, to you, to them, nor did he promise the land to all of us together. Abraham did not receive the land as an individual, but as the father of a future nation. The owner of the promised land is the Knesset Israel, which is the community persona. And there are some other aspects of this. For example, Rabbi Soloveitchik writes on in On Repentance in his book Al HaTshuvah, Themes of the High Holidays. He talks about the difference between the nature of the individual vidui that the Kohen Gadol did on Yom Kippur, and the vidui done on behalf of the entire Jewish people. And he notes there's a marked difference. I'm trying to see if I could find. I have it here. There's a marked difference in the mood between those two confessions. The confession of the individual is scary, because as individuals, we do not know if our repentance is going to be accepted. We do not know if our tshuva, cut it or not. But when it comes to the vidui on behalf of the entire Jewish people, it's a much happier, I would say, more optimistic type of vidui. And I'll read you from this book, a wonderful book called Majesty and Humility by Reuven Ziegler, where it's almost like a textbook for Rabbi Soloveitchik's thought. Looks like this. He says something fascinating. In the first vidui, man is judged purely on his individual merits. Therefore, without prologue, he immediately launches into a recitation of his sins and ends by begging for forgiveness. As an individual, one has no right to demand that God grant atonement. And therefore, as Rabbi Soloveitchik puts it, the mood of this confession is one of insecurity. However, he continues, communal vidui is of an entirely different nature, because God has made an eternal covenant with Knesset Yisrael. The Jews are guaranteed forgiveness as a people. God will never entirely destroy us, nor will he exchange us for another nation. We preface the vidui by reminding God of the covenant and the love between him and his people. After confessing our sins, we request and even demand atonement for Knesset Yisrael, to whom forgiveness has been promised. The entire mood of this confession is one of security and even joy. So that's another practical difference between how you look at Knesset Yisrael. If it's a group of individuals, then it's everyone for themselves when it comes to Yom Kippur vidui. But if we're part of one entity, the whole entity is judged as one. So it's actually a positive, but also has a little bit of a scary element, in the sense that the Jewish people are promised eternal survival, but each individual Jew is not. Right? It's an important theological idea when thinking about tragedies that have befallen the Jewish people. There's a promise, as Rabbi Soloveitchik understands it, that the Jewish people are eternal, but individual Jews are not eternal. Okay, and the last point, Rabbi Sol, that I want to mention here, the Jew who believes in Knesset Yisrael is the Jew who lives with Knesset Yisrael where she may be and is prepared to die for her, who hurts with her pain and rejoices in her joy, who fights her wars, suffers her defeats, and celebrates her victories. The Jew who believes in Knesset Yisrael is the Jew who joins himself as an indestructible link, not only to the Jewish people of this generation, but to Knesset Yisrael of all generations. So Rabbi Soloveitchik understands Knesset Yisrael to not only be a recognition of our connection to every Jew currently. This goes back and forward, right? As Jews, we see ourselves as connected to all the Jews who came before us, right? And therefore, everything that we do is a reflection on them. And everything we do affects, in some way related to their actions. And, whatever sacrifices and whatever they did in order to stay connected and stay dedicated to Knesset Yisrael, we are the immediate next chain in that, and therefore we have sort of a responsibility for what comes next, but we also have a responsibility for the future generations. So Rabbi Soloveitchik sees a Jew living in three dimensions. We've talked about this before. Here, I believe I'm part of the current Knesset Yisrael, but I also have lived, or I'm connected to the past, and what happened in the past is directly related to my life now, and my life now again, in somehow, on some level, passes judgment on what came before me, and what I do now also, and maybe this is more obvious, also has ramification and follow through in terms of what's going to come, next. So in the future generations, in these selections that I gave, Rabbi Soloveitchik is very much focused on the Knesset Yisrael idea, not the individual, which he talks about in other places as well. He talks about in Halachic Man the importance of the creativity and using our own minds in order to understand the Torah and to create in the worlds of Torah. That's also a fundamental aspect of Rabbi Soloveitchik's teachings. So just to sum things up, we got an understanding from Rav Hirsch's perspective of what the thematic move is from Vayikra to Bamidbar, from the ideal to the real. We understood that there are two important players here, actors. One is Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people, which is its own independent entity, not a partnership, right? A partnership is a lot of different people acting together. It's a corporation. It's one entity. But nonetheless, without negating the importance of the individual and the important contributions that the individual can make, and the recognition that we are all created with our unique abilities. And I talked about the Nitziv, who talks about this before in other contexts. And then the idea that what it means to be part of Knesset Yisrael, what it means to be part of Adat Yisrael, does not only mean to feel that I'm connected to Adat Yisrael here and now, but it also refers to my connection to everyone that came before me and everyone that is going to come after me. So that's a little, some thoughts, some things to consider as we make the transition this Shabbat from Vayikra to Bamidbar. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Anyone have any comments or questions? I'll unmute everybody for a minute. Okay, any questions?
Comments? Hey, that's a great concept.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Great concept.
Okay, so I just want to let everyone know that if you go to the UOS website and you click on the Shavuot page. Actually, I could show you what it looks like, so you know what I'm talking about. If you click on here, join us for Shavuot. You have some nice things. We have a Shavuot davening guide with explanations of what to say on Shavuot. You could download the whole Shavuot machzor from Koren here if you have a lot of paper in your printer. You could download a Shavuot reader here if you want to. If you have to give them your email address, your first name and last name, and then right away you'll be able to download some very excellent articles about Shavuot. And then we're also trying to get people to study one chapter of the book of Shmuel over the course of Shavuot. You study it all over Shavuot, and then we will have a siyum, a celebration siyum, after Shavuot. So let me show you how that works. You go to the website here. You just click right here. And then you see, you could fill in your name, where you want it, which chapters. There's a brief chapter summary, so you could see what topics interest you. And then hopefully we'll be able to have a siyum, a completion ceremony for all of Shmuel, Shmuel Aleph and Bet. So hopefully you'll be able to navigate your way over there and choose some learning. I see Glenn Muller has already signed up for Perek Zion and Chet. Way to go. Oh, and Tet. Way to go, Glenn. Okay. So anyway, if you can, that'll be lovely. Even if you can't, that's also lovely. I don't think you can do it on my screen. You have to go back on your own screen. Just start with the UOS website back here and click on this, and then you'll follow the links. One more time, you click on this, and then you scroll down a little bit to Shavuot Siyum, and right here, there is an option. And then there are some links here to find the text online so you could print out the chapters that you need if you want to have them handy for Shavuot. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for joining. It was wonderful to see you all. Have a great day. I hope to see you maybe for Kabbalat Shabbat. If not, next week's Lunch and Learn. Also, next week is Yom Yerushalayim. We have some great programs for Yom Yerushalayim. Those are also being emailed out to everyone. So hopefully you'll take advantage of those. Okay, take care, everyone. Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye.